Welcome to Inside Texas Live, presented by Academy Sports and Outdoors. I'm Joe Cook. We got Justin Wells. We got Ian Boyd. Thank you for watching. Make sure you like this video. Make sure you subscribe to the channel. Always bringing it here every week throughout the every day throughout the off season. Even though there's no football action going on, there's still plenty of football to talk about, and we'll keep doing that here as we get to talk about one of the best things that are that's a possibility for Texas football this upcoming season, and that's Arch throwing bombs. So should be a lot of fun. Thank you for joining. Let me get this pulled up on the screen. But Ian, we talk about play action a lot, and I guess from a very basic level, why does play action open up the deep passing offense?
It buys time because defensive linemen cannot rush up the field the same way when they're worried about the run. And if you show them run action, then it tends to cause them to slow down in their pass rush. By buying time, you can develop longer, more complicated routes for receivers to use to try to get open. And then the fake to the running back slows down the defensive line, but it also tends to suck in linebackers. Especially if you have, if you're really convincing about it, maybe you pull a guard or something. The linebackers see that, they zoom in, and then they have to bail when they realize it's not a run. And in that time, most play action routes send a guy over the deep middle where the linebacker should be. If the linebackers can't get that back there to cover that, the safeties have to come up, or else there's just a guy running wide open down the middle. The safeties come up to get that, then you have the bomb post route over the top behind the safety. And so it's just a layered sequential cause and effect deal that springs guys open often behind the defense.
Justin, obviously one of the things that these types of schemes need, however, you can't just run a play fake and hope it works out. There's got to be an actual threat to run, which we may not talk about a ton today, but that has to be there for this to have any sort of effectiveness.
It absolutely does, and that's the beauty of having a guy like Arch Manning and Trey Weisner. You know, Weisner's a guy that, you know, you're going to rely on those guys like they did last year, but those guys are going to be as important as anything. If you're not, you know, I think Georgia at home last year taught us, hey, you better have a run threat, otherwise we're going to pin our ears and have fun all day, and that's the lesson. You have to keep defenses honest. To do that, you're going to have to sell that play fake. Now, Arch has been selling that play fake forever. Like I guarantee he was working on that when he was 4 or 5 years old. That's a Manning staple, just to sell, the hard sell on that play fake. I remember Peyton being so deliberate about that. But the run game's got to be a threat. And Trey Weisner is going to be one of those guys. C.J. Baxter is going to be one of those guys. Jarrett Gibson needs to be one of those guys. You got to keep the defense honest. If they don't think you're going to run the ball, they're going to continue to rush. They're going to come up. It's not going to be as effective. And so, they're going to have to rely on that tailback to make this whole thing work.
Ian, before we get to numbers you pulled up, a lot of people may have Pro Football Focus or see – Pro Football Focus numbers, and here they are up on the screen, and be like, oh, well, he's got this on play action. And, you know, even if this is close, it's good. But you identified some problems with Pro Football Focus's numbers before you went into your own in-depth. So just looking at this, you know, 29 for 41, 555, 4 touchdowns, 1 pick, you know, obviously pretty good. 13.5 yards per attempt, completing that high a percentage is what you're looking for. 2 big-time throws, 2 turnover-worthy throws. But as your numbers and your analysis illustrates, that's a little bit – you found it to be a little bit different when you look up RPOs.
Yeah, I went through every single play that Arch Manning threw a pass on in 2024, hat tip to Nash for curating those on YouTube. I think we've all watched that a few times already this offseason. And so I looked at you offered, I was like, I think I'm going to look up his play action numbers last year since I was writing on it. Joe, you said, I could show you PFF's numbers. And I was like, well, I'm not sure how they count RPOs. And I don't want to count RPOs. So how about I'll just do this tedious work and then we'll compare and contrast and see what the difference is. And sure enough, they were obviously counting RPOs in those numbers. I don't blame them. It makes things a lot easier.
Yeah.
That's not really accurate. I wanted to know what happens when Arch fakes a handoff with no run read and then drops back and throws the ding football with behind pass protection. I want to know what the numbers are in RPOs too, because that's also really interesting, but it's not the same thing. And so I did that and I got a more curated collection of plays, and the numbers were pretty astounding.
Yeah. I put up it was that PFF had them like 29 for 41.
41. I have 47 here, but I guess that was 47 play action calls.
And yes, 47 dropbacks.
47 dropbacks, and he threw on 41 of those.
Yeah.
So I should really say 29 for 41. Maybe we'll edit it in a second. I didn't realize that was the distinction. That matters for that number too. So
yeah, but we're looking at the, you know, the two sacks and a scramble, 431 play action plays, 421 yards, 13.6 yards per play, and a turnover. Was that that was probably the ULM pick if I had to take a guess at it.
Which I also have reflected in my numbers because that one was definitely play action.
So. Let's see. We'll keep on going. You get into his progression passing. We've talked about that a lot. But play action is, you know, play action paired with a run game is what everybody thinks of when they think of ideal Steve Sarkisian offense. And as long as Arch can hit some deep shots.
No, you blew past my numbers. You gave the PFF numbers.
I thought we hit the big ones.
No, my precise numbers.
32 of 43.
No. Go up. Scroll up.
29 of 41.
Scroll up. 18 for 28 for 401 yards at 14.3 yards per attempt. And then 31 plays where he dropped back on play action for 421 yards at 13.6 yards per play. Three touchdowns, one turnover, the interception. Also, he had a 26-yard scramble against Mississippi State on play action that I think a lot of us thought should have been another touchdown.
Oh, he was. Is that the one he was just short?
Allegedly.
Yeah.
And then he finished it on a quarterback sneak like a couple plays later anyways.
14.3 yards per attempt is good. 13.6 yards per play is, you know, that's 13 yards. You're taking up a tenth of the field every time and a little bit more. You go through some of the numbers on his different aspects, including what RPOs, drop back passing, and we've gone over that.
I extrapolated what his RPO numbers were by simply deducting the extra play action shots that PFF had counted, but I bet those are a little bit off because I bet they counted some screens. I bet they left out some screens, and I bet that they missed some throws that were like RPOs where the quarterback doesn't have to hold the ball out for the running back on an RPO. If he sees it's there, he could just pull back and throw immediately. Yeah.
And like a nail screen.
Without that executed fake, I don't know how PFF counts that.
Yeah, so. it's just a pre-snap read. You know, if you see, you count numbers, and if you see it, you don't even hand off. You throw the screen. So now we'll get into a little bit of some of the different schemes Sark uses. And Justin, one of the things is we kind of heard Ian talk about how it looks. You know, you have the deep middle, you have the deep over. And one of the biggest evolutions, I think, for pro football in recent years has been that too high safety. You know, they don't want Pat Mahomes thrown to Tyreek Hill. They don't want what's his name? Jalen Hurts throwing to AJ Brown, DK, whatever. The star receiver, AJ Brown. They don't want that.
I think Metcalf got traded to the Steelers, didn't he?
But
I can't remember.
One of the things that hasn't totally taken over in college quite yet, because A, it's difficult to teach, and B, you can only teach college kids so much of defense.
Texas saw quite a bit of it last year. So the college game is evolving. We saw quite a bit of it. I think that's kind of be the counter to what Sark wants to do. But I think you remember the Gruden quarterback camp with Quinn. I think Clemson was in the too high when they talked about Gunnar Helm, you know, getting Mickens, getting that safety. And in this, you know, in this instance, like you said, we know they don't run drawings. They don't draw routes. They run plays. It's going to be more prevalent because that's the X factor to beat the deep throw, to keep guys on their toes. I feel like we're going to continue to see more and more of it, especially against Sark led offenses. Like it's something that we saw early against Arkansas in 2021, 2022 that Hudson Carr just was not ready for. We saw it last year against Georgia and a number of other teams. You're going to continue to see it. It's going to be one of those things that really tests your safeties without question. And those bigger schools like Georgia, when you've got the Malachi Starks and you've got the Ransoms for Ohio State, that can be deadly. Like that's almost unfair. But for the most part, it's going to be one that I don't know if college defenses. I think Texas has enough weapons to counter it, but it's still. Texas is going to see a lot of it over the next few years.
Be interesting to watch. We'll go through some deep shots. And I think there's a lot of – one of people's reasons for hesitation on Arch this year is who he did a lot of his stuff against. Ian, like a lot of these numbers are from ULM. They're from UTSA. They're from a Mississippi State team that went 2-10. As we watch them against – these in his extended action and his starts, what do you pull that may translate against a Florida or an Oklahoma or Texas A&M, you know, teams with more talented defenses?
Yeah. Well, the numbers are too good to just be that worried. I mean, it's not like ULM and UTSA are, Leander High School or Austin High or something. Like, they're still college competitive G5 defenses. Their best players were probably poached by Power 5 teams this offseason in the transfer portal. It's not that big of a difference. When you're throwing for 14 yards an attempt, you have a long way down before you're not just absolutely murdering people. So it's notable. You note it, you remark on it. This is against weaker teams, but it's not like it's just going that's going to show up against all but the very best defenses, assuming he does not improve.
Right.
And if he improves, it's going to show up against the best defenses too.
He's got to do it against these guys before he does it against the Georgias and the Ohio States and of those sorts. Like, he still there's a proof of concept there that he's already done. He's already had. Now he's just going to do it against higher level guys.
He's going to do it against Ohio State and Georgia. I can tell you now.
I think he's going to do it against the Philadelphia Eagles. Yeah. I'm just ready for it now.
Maybe not at 14 yards an attempt, but he's going to hit some stuff. He hit some stuff on Georgia, and it's like six snaps that he ran. He did some damage a couple times against Georgia. And I've watched his two sacks like a dozen times now against Georgia. And they were pretty understandable. It was like a dude for the first one, he got run down. He got flushed and then run down by like some 5A outside linebacker or five star, not 5A.
Damon Wilson, probably.
I think it was Wilson. It might have been Walker. And it's like, you know, yeah, no, he got run down by Jalen Walker.
Right. Like, it was Jalen Walker and then Mykal Williams.
And then I think Damon Wilson blew by Cam Williams and hit Arch when he's trying to throw in like 2 seconds.
It's that caused a fumble. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, what are you going to do? It's not really Arch's fault.
Right. Well, so, that little clip right there is supposed to be just a taste. Before we keep going, got to show some love to our sponsor. That is Jordan via Academy Sports. Academy Sports and Outdoors is your new home for Jordan. Gear up today and take flight on the court, off the court, and above the court. Unleash your greatness with head-to-toe Jordan gear for the entire family. Available in-store and at academy.com. Elevated styles and shoes for everyone. Unstoppable value every day. And plus, Academy offers easy ways to shop and save time, like free one-hour in-store or curbside pickup on academy.com orders. Or you can choose same-day delivery powered by DoorDash. Order by 4, get it by 8. Check out Academy's full Jordan selection today at Academy Sports and Outdoors or at academy.com. Make sure we got the we'll get some here we go. I like this comment. I'm going to look up Lagway really quickly because I feel like because I like this. I think it's just kind of interesting to note.
And they're going to be paired together for the next 2 years, by the way.
Yeah. And I don't think it's unfair.
No. You know,
it's just kind of what it is. Lagway was 46 for 71, 818 yards, 11.5 yards per attempt, 5 touchdowns, 3 picks. So and,
you're talking about strictly on play action?
On PFF's play action.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and people lauded Lagway for what he did last year because when he was finally healthy, Florida won as a result. But I think this is starting to – what
Florida
this
was competitive is. As a result.
I think the that characterization is not fair, though, by Blake. He said Lagway played some bad defenses. Lagway dropped 456 yards and 3 touchdowns on Samford. Okay, that's – that's pretty bad. But then he started against he played and they did that was the only easy game they played all year.
Well, Florida State.
Okay. He didn't even do very much damage against Florida State.
He didn't have to, yeah.
He did Ole Miss, LSU, Tennessee, Kentucky, and then he closed out against Tulane, which is
solid.
I don't know what Tulane's record was last year, but I want to say Tulane is probably better. It was better than ULM or UTSA.
Yeah. Yes.
So that's going to be
better on offense.
That's going to be fun to track. We'll get back to Arch though. And I hate always doing the comparison game, but you bring this up. He saw it and he threw it. You know, and. Quinn just was not doing that on the deep passes. Just wasn't the case. But
which deep was passes. We are, expected that from him.
Yeah. Play action. And Ian, I think you admit play action is not only just deep bombs. There's more to it than that. You can see this is a goal line play. This has to go to Helm because Juan Davis didn't catch any touchdowns. Let's see.
It's not a goal line. That's the previous play before it cuts.
Say again.
Go ahead.
I was about to say it's a little grainy to see, but I think the thing worth noting here is watch. What you were talking about with play action, watch the guard. DJ Campbell pulls. And if you're a linebacker, you're thinking, okay, run play. And Texas does this decently often.
Yeah.
See, and then Helm at the top of the screen pulls 2 linebackers.
Yeah.
So not only are these linebackers having to respect play action. If you have a tight end who's good, they have to respect that.
Yeah, Sark was lethal. And you outlined this in an article on the importance of the leak play.
Yeah.
In Sark's playbook. Sark was so good last year at running plays where it looks like a run, and then the tight end seems to be blocking, and then he just releases over the middle of the field instead. And like this, and he's wide open. Or sometimes he would start to release and then like break down the field and go vertical on the leak. And so you know that coming into this game, Mississippi State has seen that on film. And they're like, when you see Gunnar Helm release down the field, you got to be all over that, because they will torch us on this. And then Arch Manning just immediately goes to the next option, which is Bond running wide open over the middle.
Yeah.
And then on bottom, they have that cool Sark thing where he releases two guys into the flat in succession. And the first guy becomes a lead blocker on a check down. Those are nasty.
Yeah.
They scored on that a few times this year, where, and then they scored on some fakes off of it, because Sark layers everything like a mad scientist. You cover everything up, and then there's a check down. And not only is there a check down and wide open in the flat, but he's got like another running back or a tight end lead blocking for him. So the first guy that's like, oh, shoot, check down, time to clean this up, shows up and just gets blocked. It's brutal.
That's the thing. This kind of – it's a 3-3-5, so there are three off-ball linebackers, I think. Or at least this play looks like there's a 3-3-5. Watch how the Sam linebacker reacts to the play fake. And then watch how Arch throws through the lane that he leaves. So, boom, he starts following the play fake, and there's the lane that the ball goes through. So it's all intertwined.
Ian, with him hitting that second progression, how valuable is it going to be for Arch this year in this offense to have a guy that's going to literally go through progressions to hit the best check?
Huge, Justin.
But how big?
Bigger than the screen.
That's pretty big.
AAR asks, the pump fake screen deep pass play was lethal in 2024. I almost counted those as play action, but I decided not to, because it's just not what people think of with play action. But those are basically play action plays in modern football. Because you like fake the screen with the pump fake, and then you throw it deep to the guy that was pretending to throw a lead block. Those are like a big part of Sark's offense. They're basically play action shots. It's just that the action is pass instead of run. But I did not count those, because I didn't feel like trying to make some kind of modern statement. I just wanted to give everybody the
good,
the numbers with what they would think of as play action.
Off the top of my head,
the SEC championship, bud.
Yeah, that I don't. Oh, I was gonna say the pass to Golden in the corner at Arkansas. That was one.
Was it?
He's wide open. The deep corner, not the short side of the field.
Oh, yes. Okay. Yeah.
Pylon.
Now I'm,
yeah, I think
now,
that's right.
Yeah, that was a.
I was thinking the last one, but okay.
Yeah. So we'll keep going, and then. As you kind of talk about, play action isn't just the bombs. There's more to it. But this is kind of a bomb just because how long this throw is. Like,
that's not a bomb. That's what you call an M60. It's not a black cat. It's not a bomb.
Okay, let's see. That's the 20... Trying to do some Pythagorean stuff here. That's the 20.
Oh boy,
26
from the hash to the number, I think. Which is
the 26 to the. I mean, that's still almost a 25-yard pass. Probably a little bit further.
That's what we would call intermediate, Joe.
It's an explosive.
What's the numbers on the explosive play? Like, is it 25 or more yard, 20
it's
or more
12,
yard?
It's 12 on – I think the stat thing calls it 12 on runs and 20 on passes.
Okay.
So it's
well, then you've got the big, you got the explosive play.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which I think that's going to be a staple of Manning. He's going to be a walking explosive play. The fact that he can do this is, I think, what's going to make this season so exciting, because defenses at all times are going to have to be aware this kid has a penchant for shooting it long. It's almost like trying to cover Steph Curry. When do you pick him up? Half court? Because he might pull up. It's just the threat of it that I think is substantial.
Ian, one thing here that I think we need to discuss is, because Texas is going to have a new center in Cole Hudson, who's got experience, but maybe not so much as far as calling protections. And Arch, who has done it in the amount of playing time that he has, these play action protections, I feel like, require a little bit more details to follow that almost look like a full slide. Because watch what happens, and I'll try to pause it. Hayden Connor is going to pull from left guard to the right side. So this is a six-man protection. Six, maybe seven, depending on what the running back does. So Hayden Connor's pulling, and that leaves everybody else to deal with, and it ends up being a seven-man protection because there's a corner blitz.
Well, he pulled, and the linebacker still followed the running back. You notice that?
Yeah, I guess what I'm saying is how equally important is command at the O-line for these types of things to set protections? Because we know, remember, he got popped on a pass we're going to see later.
If I had to guess why left guard is not totally settled, it would be this. Because every time we've seen Neto Umeazulu run blocking in games, when he comes in relief, he looks like a menace. But he has not been able to crack the starting lineup for, this is his fourth year now, right?
Yeah, fourth year junior.
I'm betting that it's making sure that they don't give up free-hitting guys running up the middle on stuff like this. And this stuff like this is why Hayden Connor was a three-year starter. On this one, he pulls and he does a good job, but he was also good at not letting guys run up the middle when he wasn't pulling on play action. And Sark, he wants to run the ball. He wants to be physical. But number one is protect the quarterback on shots, because we're going to beat people by landing shots. He's a knockout artist. He doesn't want to trade jabs for 15 rounds or whatever. He wants to throw bombs.
Haymakers.
Widowmakers.
There's a few more different instances of this one from rollout, which is always a fun thing to track. See what happens here.
This is his first play of 2024. Yeah. I love how he threw Cook open back across.
Go back up that way, dude.
Was it on purpose by Manning? I don't know.
Probably not.
But it sure looked really good as a result.
It's crazy how connecting him and Jonte Cook were. They had a little symbiotic thing between them. They really did.
Did someone miss a block, or did they just bring more men that could be protected?
I wasn't watching for that.
It looked like the edge was coming, was blocking anyway. I mean, was blitzing.
I don't think they saw that. It seems like maybe there was a nickel blitz that Texas didn't know was coming. And they were maybe a little lucky that he chased the running back instead of Arch.
Yeah.
Or Arch's first play could have been just getting buried.
Welcome to college football.
This is the deep over, right? I think this one's to Golden. So Golden, you know, tight set, two tight ends.
Wingo.
Oh, that's Wingo?
For sure.
Wingo's at the bottom. Oh, he runs a post corner.
Yeah. That's what Golden doesn't have legs that big.
So Wingo's at the bottom of the screen, runs up, runs the post, and then runs the corner. And then, yeah, you're just kind of like, wow, that was really damn cool. And it's just one of those things, Justin, it's like, you can't defend that.
I mean, no, you can't defend that. That's part of why it's so beautiful. That's part of why, and you've got a true freshman running that route. You're putting a lot of trust in this play in an 18-year-old in his second or third game, fourth game? There's a lot to that. And the beauty of Arch Manning and Ryan Wingo is that they know that. They remember what the story we told after the first big play, after the first practice of Arch, when Ryan Wingo came in the spring semester, and you know Arch went big to him, and they landed it, and everybody's kind of like, ooh, ah, that was cool. And Arch brought in when Ryan was jogging back to the huddle, Arch kind of leaned into him and goes, "They can't cover you. I'm about to throw this." And Ryan's eyes just, blossom. Like, this is exactly everything I've been thinking about and dreaming about and wanting is happening. And so, yeah, you don't defend that. That's the beauty of Ryan Wingo. You're not going to be able to. And now you're going to get him older. You're going to get him. He's improving his game. He has to work on getting that free release, violent hands, getting off of a jam, getting off of a hold. Once he starts figuring that stuff out, guys, this is going to be chess. This is going to be a lot of fun.
Ian, anything else to sum it all up?
I did not include any, but sometimes they ran play action screens. And those were some of the plays that Quinn was so good at, where like you fake a run one way and then like maybe you spin around and throw it to the other side of the field. And Arch was actually pretty good at those. Like, that was the kind of play where it's like, Quinn is so good at these. Are they ever going to have anything like this again? Because he could throw, off platform from different angles so well. Arch is actually pretty good at it, too. Every single type of play action play I've seen that Sark has, Arch is really good at it.
That's going to be valuable if he's in the offense.
I've been writing about all the different stuff they're going to do with Arch now. That's maybe a little different than with Quinn, or maybe a little more drop back, maybe a little more RPO. But this play action stuff is what really matters. He's so freaking good at it. And Sark is so good at it. And Sark has not had an amazing play action passer yet in Texas. And now he has not only a good one, but like an amazing one. Ooh. So it's possible that the results this year with Arch just blow people away with how different it is, because this stuff is so potent and explosive. 14.3 yards per attempt.
I don't think fans understand this is going to be a different offense. It is not different in the traditional sense, but different in what they can execute. There's more minutiae to this. There's more stuff going on. I think people are a little worried about the O-line, where they don't need to be. Like, I think it's going to be different. Arch is going to help them, I think, in a lot of that sense. And so
I think it's going to be kind of like, remember the 2008 Oklahoma team?
Yes. And
when they played bad teams that were overwhelmed, they just dropped 60 every week.
Yes.
I think it's going to be kind of like that. Probably not 60 because they don't use tempo like that Oklahoma team did.
That Oklahoma team had some weapons too.
Yeah, they had a really good quarterback.
And a really good tight end.
Arch Manning is going to be better than Sam Bradford.
I'll take Sam Bradford numbers with Arch.
I think
they have similar golf games as well. And they're both pretty good dunkers. There's some comparisons there.
I think you're going to see a lot more blowouts of bad to mid-level teams by Texas.
Whoever writes game stories loves blowouts.
I like this question from AR. And at times last year felt like Texas had to string double-digit play scoring drives. How much would y'all expect the count to go down with Arch? part of it. You know, if you pick up 50 yards in a play instead of 50 yards in four plays,
you're scores too soon, Joe. How much are they going to test this defense, which is probably going to be the strength of the program again in 2025?
Doesn't matter. You put 6 points. It doesn't matter. You put 6 points on the board.
I'm with you. I'm just wondering how many plays that puts on the defense, because we've seen that before. Score early, score big, then the defense kind of that rep total starts to go up.
Well, you know whose rep total will go up is Colin Page.
So, kind of, I found this real quick before we get to our next thing. See if I go to CFB stats for a lot of different stuff. This is long passing play leaders in 2025 or 2024. It may be hard to see right now. It's sorted by 10-yard pass plays. Texas was third in the country in 10-yard pass plays with 176. They had 16 games to do it. It's a big part of it. If you sort to 20-yard pass plays, it goes to Texas was number one, 80, right ahead of Ole Miss, Syracuse, San Jose State. If you sort it to 30, number two. But
there's something in common with a lot of those teams near the top, especially at the 10-yard-plus mark. They all had somebody drafted.
Quarterback play or air raid?
They all had somebody drafted.
Let me note that a fair chunk of these for Texas came from those arch numbers I just told you about.
Anything over 40, 30 or 40 yards, you know it did.
That 70-yarder was arch. He had – let me see. I actually have it right here because I have it. He had a 40-yarder, 19-yarder, 75-yarder, 36-yarder, 56-yarder, 25-yarder, 22-yarder, 31-yarder, all on play action. And he had a couple bombs not on play action too. So like a ridiculous percentage of those plays that put Texas number one or number three came from arch in like three games.
It came from the backup quarterback.
This is what I'm telling you about. How different it could be next year.
We need your assurance, Ian, for the fans. This offense is going to look different, and it's going to be good. It's going to be fun.
Quinn averaged 7.8 yards per attempt last year. Arch averaged 10.4. Quinn had played these bad teams, but
Chris has an interesting question. Because we saw the arch package, and I'm wondering how much more we're going to see of that. Because that goes into the taking shots category.
I mean, I'll count – what do we count as long? 20?
Yeah. He'll do that.
I bet he's got a couple.
He'll do that a bunch of times, probably.
A bunch?
There's going to be at least one occasion where they run zone read, nobody's paying attention to arch,
and he's going
to
tuck it and go. Yeah.
And there's nobody. Heck, I mean, Quinn did that against – well, what I don't know if it was zone read, but, like, he did it against Baylor. Like, you know, if Quinn could do it, if Sam could do it, I think Arch is going to do it. One more thing. How many of the early opponents are going to be trying to put Arch on the bench as a defensive – oh, like, that's what Mississippi State tried to do last year.
Lead the clock.
Mississippi State, that Lebby offense – for the most part, veer and shoot is go fast, go simply, and just go. But Jeff Lebby knew that team, if they went three and out in a minute, they were toast.
Yeah.
So that's why they do the hurry up and wait. They would snap the ball, run the play, get up to the line, but then stay there to prevent Texas from substituting. Yeah, you get the advantage of keeping them in a personnel. You get the disadvantage of letting them rest, but you're shortening the game.
That's the beauty of Texas defense, in my opinion. Like, they're going to be able to take away some of that. You want to shorten the game? Get a first down, because we'll give you three shots.
Here's the thing, and the strategic personal foul. For what Arch Manning is, he's still quarterback of the Texas Longhorns. And that usually kind of puts that target on the back anyway. And also now, like, if you accumulate personal fouls, you can get tossed. If you get two, I think you're ejected. So it's like, oh, well, they could put a walk-on out there. It's like, well, like, yeah, and then you could throw at the walk-on who, yeah. Teams don't do this.
It sounds like something a bunch of guys in a garage would talk about rather than something that would be executed on a game, college game on Saturdays.
He also took at least two good shots last year.
Yeah, Mississippi State.
He probably took a couple against Mississippi State. And he took that one against Ohio State.
It's about the issue about getting hit.
Yeah.
Nothing was worse than the Ohio State fourth down play. Because it was such a fluke way that he was hit and the way he fell. Just a bunch of fluky stuff. That whole game, man.
But if people don't think Oklahoma tries to hurt Quinn Ewers every game for the last 3 years, like it's already out there. Like Joe is saying, and it's not that easy.
That's a rivalry too. That the hate just overlaps that, I think, too.
It's not that easy to get a great shot on a quarterback. It's not actually that easy to do,
especially when they're smart enough to not always let you.
Yes.
Yeah. Like, I think Arch is going to be really good about how he takes hits. Whereas Quinn, that was the polar opposite.
And they've got five bodyguards who are all bigger and stronger than you. And it's not like you think this Texas defense wouldn't take some retribution if you delivered a cheap shot on Arch Manning. Like, it's you're playing with fire. By the way, I looked it up, and Arch had at least 3 20-plus yard runs last year. He had a 21-yarder on Georgia, 26-yard scramble on Mississippi State, and the 67-yard zone read keeper. So I think that number could be really high with a full season.
Really high? Yeah. I don't think Sark.
That was two scrambles, Justin. That was one zone read that they didn't defend and two scrambles, and that's
right, all. Right. I know they're going to use it. Using it is what makes it effective, Ian. I'm with you. I think you have to count the number of shots you let this quarterback take, especially in his first year, especially with an offensive line that's going to be different now. There's a lot of gelling that needs to go on. You got to watch the count there, the hit count. And I think that's what makes Arch so good is it reminds me of Emmitt Smith. Like, Emmitt Smith, they wonder how did he play so long, break the for so many, because Emmitt Smith was like the master of not getting popped. He would get tackled. He would not get blasted, which is what cost people injuries, careers, things of that sort. I think Arch is the same way. He's going to be able to be smart enough to understand, I don't want to box myself into this situation. Okay, he'll be a reactive guy, but they're going to have to use that, like you said, because it's effective, and it also gives this offense gives the defense something else to pay attention to.
He was not that careful last year.
As a freshman, probably not. But now that he's in it,
he needs to be more careful about how he goes down, for sure.
Yeah. And before we keep going, got to show some love to our sponsor. That is Andre the Lawyer.
This video is brought to you by Andre the Lawyer. If you're injured, trust the team that secured millions for their clients and helped thousands of Texans with their injury case. Car wrecks, slip and falls, 18-wheeler accidents, on-the-job injuries, and wrongful deaths. Don't let insurance tell you what your claim is worth. Hire Andre the Lawyer to fight for you. Principal office is in Dallas, but they serve Texans throughout the state. So don't wait and call Andre the Lawyer today at 214-444-8808. That's 214-444-8808. The contact information is in the description.
Thank you, LC. Other thing I wanted to talk about is fourth down. It's going to look a little bit different this upcoming year. And I tried to figure out what went into Texas fourth down strategy last season. Longhorns were 18 for 34. They were middle of the country or middle of the packs, ranked 61st. And I went through every one. And I think there are a lot of people who believe that Sark started to go for it because Bert Auburn started to lack effectiveness. Michael Kern started to lack effectiveness. I can't tell if that's the chicken or the egg.
I think it was also part of the let's show them something they're not expecting. Because how long did we wait the last two or three weeks of the season for that play to be a pop pass? Like, we almost thought at Ohio State that was about to happen.
Right.
So I think it was somewhat – I think it's both, actually, Joe.
Right. I think there's it's a little bit of both. But something Nash wrote, and it was even before – or excuse me, right after the Vanderbilt game, where Sark actually didn't go up for it on fourth down, took the points, and that turned out to be the margin that Texas needed to win the game, is that he just goes for it. Like, if you're inside the 40, but you're not in the red zone, and you have five or less to go, he's probably going to go for it.
I wonder if he's a good poker player.
Yeah. So I've tracked all these, from Colorado State, ULM, all the way to the end of the season. Green is touchdown. Green is first down, gold is touchdown, red is turnover on downs, black is turnover. And you can tell for the most part, obviously Georgia's a little bit different because when you're trailing, you just got to go. You have no choice. But when you look at the rest of these, 1 yard needed. 1 yard needed on a goal to go, seven, which was when they were already up big. Like, for the most part, in competitive situations, Justin, like where they have a lead, they're on the opponent's half of the field. If it's under 5 yards, they're keeping the offense out there.
Do you think that's Sark's offensive acumen? And it's kind of gunslinger mentality from being a previous quarterback and knowing, hey, if we get this, we win. Or if we get this, we're up two possessions. Or do you think it's the other side of it?
I think last year it may have been more the other side of it. But we've seen him just go for it. He's been a pretty regular go for it type guy.
I'm wondering what Herman was always about the notebook, the analytics. I wonder how Sark views that in this constraint.
So here's the thing. The stuff that's highlighted in yellow is like outliers. One thing you can see is that they have – it's either 11 or 12 personnel for the most part. But this Florida one, when it's fourth and one on the minus 24 and Sark goes for it and Gibson gets the 1 yard – He claimed after that game that the book said go for it. And
that might have been one of the first times I think I've heard him say that.
I think there are two possibilities. Either that wasn't true, which, maybe. He doesn't have to say. Or the book did say go for it, and that allows us to infer a lot about how many decisions and how often coaches are actually going against the book.
That would be a fascinating deep dive if you could ever, unearth enough of that info for a story, because I think part of it, like, I think AR makes a point. I think Sark goes with his gut. I think a lot of offensive minded head coaches go with their gut. If you let the OC run it, they're going to go for it every time, guys. At least the most of them. Maybe the hardcore conservatives won't. But like most offensive guys, they're gonna grip it and rip it. I think this is more of Sark just being, a gut feel. If you're getting a push up front, if you're moving the D line, that's an easy call. But Sark doesn't have a binder. I don't know.
No, every coach has a binder. Yeah,
I think they all do.
Made fun of Herman for mentioning it so often.
Right, because Herman almost, why? Because Herman would throw that binder under the bus. And it was the silliest thing he would ever hear. Like, all the binder told us, you saw what that damn binder did. I'm like to look for another binder. It's like, come on.
He would use it as a shield.
Yeah, and I'm like, own it, dude.
Exactly.
You're Mr. Smart Analytics.
This is from the first half of the year. You know, when you're trailing, you go for it. You know, UTSA, that was just kind of that one up here. That one was Quinn had just thrown an interception, so he's trying to keep the offense out there a little longer. You can find explanations for a few things. Then as you start to go into the second half of the season, you can kind of see a little bit of the kicking aspect of it. But at the same time, look at all these yards needed. 1, 2, 2, 1, 1, 2, 3. Like, I think Sark, Ian, valued, even with an offensive line that wasn't superb at run blocking, the opportunity to move closer for Burt for an opportunity than 3 points. Just because, A, he had trust in his defense, and B, that's probably what was the right outcome for him.
Yeah, he had a lot of stuff to pull from. They had a lot of those, like you chronicle, 22, 21, 31 personnel. He had some different grab bag tricks that he would bust out for those situations. And really, analytically, there's not a lot of field goals that are worth taking.
Right.
Past the 50, and it's like a long field goal or something that would be the same as a mediocre or bad punt versus keeping it, you just go for it. If you're on the goal line, you absolutely go for it. If you're anywhere near the goal line, because if you fail, you pin them. So, like, really, the only time you need field goals are when you're just, like, way out of range to convert, or the game context says
3 points.
Yeah.
You know, 2 possessions, 2.5 possessions, that type of thing.
I think Sark usually is decent about it when he feels better about his kicker, like you've noted. Sometimes he'll take the points when he should probably go for it. But he's usually good about, like, let's not kick a 40-plus yard field goal. Let's just go for it. He's also, as we've noted, this may change a little with Manning, but he was the king of running the ball on, like, 3rd and 9, 3rd and 6, 3rd and 7. Because he's like, we'll just go for it on 4th down anyway. For a favorable 4th down, yeah. But also, like, let's just see what we can get on this run.
Especially on the 3rd and 9 when the defense is probably anticipating pass.
Exactly.
And you had mentioned those 31 personnel. One of the things, and even with those other ones, one of the things that I found, and we had kind of gone back and forth on this about this topic, is like they never did the heavy stuff. They never brought in, you know, there were times in 2023 where they brought in Sweat and Murphy. You know, they threw the touchdowns to Murphy. He had the rushing touchdown. They threw the touchdown to Sweat and all that. They would do that on goal to go. Wouldn't often do it on 4th and 1 on the 30. But they ran like heavy maybe 4 times total all year, no matter what context.
Boy, it seemed like they ran that more. I didn't realize that.
Like, there were very rare – like, Malik Ogbo got, like, I think 3 tight end snaps last year. There was one occasion against Clemson where they brought in, like, Lole and Chapman.
Okay, I was thinking of 2 years ago and not this last year's group. Okay. Yeah. Honestly, I don't even remember it from this last year's jumbo package.
And then they did it with, like, Sevilla and Ogbo against Ohio State or something like that.
It's the same mindset, the same play set, play call, but different personnel. And those different personnel were a little different in how that would be effective.
He had this trick that worked a shocking number of times where he'd bring in 3 running backs. And then they'd all go in, like, different directions, and he'd hand off to Jarrett Gibson on a dive.
Yeah, that was Arkansas.
yeah, teams would be like, Ryan Niblett, oh, what's he doing in here? We've got to watch out for that. And it's like, no, just it's going to go to Gibson. They're just going to give it to Gibson. But teams fell for it. Playoffs, that was not going to work because everybody had watched Texas's film. So
right, when number nine, when the baby Rhino trotted out there, there was a good chance if it was on a fourth down where it was going to go. I think this year will be the year that when they see that come out, they're going to know it's coming and it's still going to happen. Like Gibson can be a bull in a china shop, fellas.
I think the one thing I wanted to kind of pull from this is like I said, if it's fourth and three on the other side of the field, they're going for it. Even if Matthew Shipley is the second coming of Sebastian Janikowski.
Matthew or Mason?
Mason. Okay.
Didn't Matthew his twin brother?
Yes.
Who kicks for like Norfolk?
Hawaii.
Hawaii.
If Mason Shipley is the second coming of Sebastian Janikowski.
I've got something that reminded me of something I'm going to ask you guys before we get out of here. A cool little question for both of you guys that I had on the radio with Trey Elling yesterday.
I just don't see Sarkisian changing too much. I feel like on fourth and three, like he said, why punt and give him the chance to take it at the 20, especially if the other option is like on the 25 or something like that. Like,
especially now you can just like those handful of times you run arch, Justin, bear with me. Those rare occasions when you pull that out, it's like fourth and three. Fourth and three, you drop the like inverted zone read play to Arch Manning that you've put on film like once all year. That's absolutely when you do that kind of stuff. And that's going to like massively expand the arsenal for those situations.
Yeah.
All right, Justin, lay it on us.
This is going to be fun. So yesterday I was on ESPN Austin with Trey Elling, one of our good friends, friend of the program at InsideTexas.com. Clemson and Notre Dame scheduled a 12-year home and home. And he asked me what would be the most ideal opponent for Texas to schedule if they had one team they could pick. And this, I want you two guys to give me your one, and then I'll tell you the one I picked. But if there was one team that they could pick for a 12-year home and home, you know, you rotate back and forth for that amount of my time, who would it be?
Is there any motivation, or is it just a question?
It's just a question. It's like, I mean, if you're in that situation, you know, if you're a player, a coach, a fan, someone covering it, Where would the best, in your opinion, what game would that be? Like, I have an idea where people want to see, but then
Ian, you go first.
I have two. One of them is, I'm not sure which one. I think it's the one AR just said. I think it's the one AR just said. It's USC.
USC, okay.
Not USC, I think it's like Notre Dame is the other one.
Notre Dame is the easy one, I think. Notre Dame's the easy take. And USC, I like USC because every year, every other year, you're in California showing those West Coast kids what it's like to play some football in the Southeast region of the country. So I think that's
Sark,
a good sign.
Sark says USC, no doubt.
Sark says USC. What about you, Joe?
No, y'all are wrong. It's UCLA.
No,
Explain
that. Explain. I want to hear this.
Your risk of loss is far less. You're also inviting a team that's not going to be a consistent or attempt to be a consistent recruiting presence in your backyard. USC continues to try to recruit Texas. Yeah. Part of that has to do with Lincoln Riley, but it's just USC. It's a national brand. You're giving them an opportunity to be in your state. And yeah, I know we all got TVs on our phones.
That's valid. That's valid. Rare.
UCLA is not doing that. And then at the same time, you get the reciprocal ability to go to California and say, we are playing in SoCal every year. You get the ability to, again, you're never entering a hostile environment. You're probably getting a home crowd. And then you're also getting it at the Rose Bowl, which is pretty cool. So
don't we have to end soon so you can make it to ballet class on time and get your tutu on?
Oh man. Yeah. What? I'm thinking for the best for Texas. With
fans don't want to watch Texas versus UCLA. It either goes well and we get these like fringe benefits,
Or it goes like 1998.
Yeah. No, it's USC. You just got to sell tickets, Joe.
Okay. I didn't think either one of you guys were going to get this. I said from a fan standpoint, from a player standpoint, from a coach's standpoint, and from a media covering standpoint, we need a 12-year home and home with the University of Hawaii. Stay with me. Every other year, you're taking your family on a vacation during the season. With NIL, these kids can send their whole family to Hawaii for this vacation. Plus, you'll get a little bit of stipend because it's part of the road trip, okay? Kyle Flood's been in Hawaii recruiting the last three cycles. They were there last week to see Malachi Lee. They were there 3 years ago to get Leona LaFau. There's some guys on that island. You get a home and home every year. To me, I think it's pretty simple. I've never been to Hawaii. That's where I want to go next. So from a big perspective, we need a 12-year deal with Hawaii. We really do. I am 100% into this. I think this would work on all levels. I think Joe and I would travel to the first game, have a freaking blast, go over there, blast the Rainbow Warriors, check out a couple new recruits that would come to your program and instantly be, you know, strong pillars of the program. It's got to be Hawaii.
No, here's the problem.
There's no problem going to Hawaii.
There's no problem going to Hawaii. It's that six out of those 12 years, Hawaii comes to Austin.
Sure. And Texas already has a tough non-con every year. They're going to schedule in Ohio State and Michigan.
USC somebody is the tough. Right so answer.
Get, instead of ULM, instead of UTSA, let the Rainbow Warriors come
it's
through there.
USC, for one because game. When they come to Austin, everybody wants to go to that game.
Do what?
It's USC because the 50% of these games, you're selling an awesome home game, maybe at night, against USC. And those are special memories.
Yeah.
Plus, no, USC isn't
Will even Gallagher. Well, see, you know, I knew Will Gallagher would understand this because he's like, Ian, you got to understand the travel of media. I'm looking for
some. You're just trying to expense a Hawaii trip. We're talking about what's better.
100%. I'm not denying that. Like, if anything, I'm like, yes, you're right. Let's do that. Because it's for the best for the program, and it would be best for the site. I can sell that.
I'm thinking, I mean, like, so why not? Why if you're going to say USC, why not Oregon?
Because what? No one wants to go up there. Wait.
Bull. You've never been, so you can't say that.
Okay, it's a nice
people
campus.
Do want to go up there, and they don't want to come home.
No. If you're a football player.
Talk to one of 2,000 recruits, I promise.
Yeah, because they get to go live in a spaceship.
Yeah, but the whole place is beautiful. Fan, the whole experience. The weather.
You drive from Portland for like 2 hours.
No, you don't 2 hours. It's like an hour and 15 minutes.
You have to drive for 2 hours to just nowhere, Oregon. It's a beautiful campus, but like Notre Dame, at least right by Chicago. Or there's nothing. There's nothing out there. And there's no recruits that you give a rip about, because you're just inviting one of your number one out of state poachers to come to Austin every other year. You go to USC and you're just like circus bunking at Mater Dei every Friday night. Once every other year.
Sark could actually stop by San Diego, California on the way to Hawaii. You do realize it's on the way.
That's true. Yeah,
we can make this work, Ian. I need the collective staff on this.
All right, which would be – you have to pick a Power 5 team. Which would be the worst? Like, worst. Like, you get no benefit. You play a tough opponent. It's not in a good reciprocal location.
Texas Tech.
I was thinking that, or that's maybe funny. Iowa State. Or Iowa.
Nobody goes to Lubbock unless they're told or forced.
If you go, and if it's going to be like in August too, if it's like the non-conference, so that makes it worse than Ames.
Maybe
I like Ames. Hey, Ames is kind of a cool place to watch a football game. I like Ames. In and out quickly. Great fans. They're fun to talk to. I like Iowa.
Ian, what's East Lansing like?
A lot better than Lubbock.
I'm with Chris Bennett. I think Iowa would be of very little benefit for Texas.
Very little.
Because you either win 7-5 or you lose 7-5.
Lansing would be kind of awesome because it's at the time of year when Michigan is a nicer place to be.
Yeah, the weather, that's perfect.
The city of Lansing is decent. It's not like amazing for a destination, but you're also within easy road trip distance of all of the like more remote hidden beauties of Michigan, like Mackinac Island or Sleeping Bear Sand Dunes or just all these like kind of amazing lake type vacation.
What about Camp Randall?
Yeah, that'd be fun.
Camp Randall would be decent.
It'd be fun, but it wouldn't be the best. We forgot one though. Why not the U?
That's valid because I can turn a Coral Gables trip into a vacation. I think there's. Ever since that Cotton Bowl, Joe, huh? Miami and Texas have kind of needed to play again.
But a lot of what applies to the USC also applies to Miami.
Right. And you're going to find probably a few more in Dade County. You're probably going to find a few more in South Florida. You can easily do that. And Miami's already trying to recruit in Texas. They get a couple of them every year. Miami's kind of like that. If I can't get Hawaii, I'll take Miami. I'll take South Beach.
Yeah, I think that's pretty good, Joe.
I like
better
that.
Better than UCLA.
So we're kind of we're it sounds like we're doing semi.
We're trying to cover all the scope.
I'm saying we're doing our best.
Oh, Virginia Tech. Poo.
Why
the poo just brought it.
It's a cool experience, but there's other benefit.
But you don't want it for 12 years.
So we're basically mountains. I don't know. It's okay.
We're basically finding weak to semi-strong power conference teams in metropolitan areas Texas would like to mine, right? So we're doing
USC. That's only part of it, Joe.
USC, UCLA, Miami, Georgia Tech. I would say Maryland, but we know where that went.
Yeah, no. You're going way too up northeast. No.
I mean, there's no reason.
I was about to say Boston College.
There's no reason to go to Northwestern.
No.
Although that new stadium is going to be pretty cool when they get it built. Yeah,
they get the funding for that.
it's either UCLA, USC, or Miami.
I got another bad one.
Those are what Joe said. It's those. After Hawaii,
but they're not Power Five though. Too,
it doesn't have to be. I don't care. They're Power Five in my book. When I'm booking that room, that's Power Five.
Syracuse is a really good bad one. I got another really good bad one.
Oh, Syracuse, do they still play in the Carrier Dome?
Yeah, I think so. Maryland.
It's not called that, but it's still that.
Maryland.
Yeah,
it's not as bad as Lubbock, but I would not be excited to. Dude.
People don't understand. Washington, D.C. is one of the most humid places on the planet Earth. It's a swamp. No, thank you. And that stadium they played in was a freaking NFL stadium. No, not Maryland.
That is the worst day. I think actual Maryland Stadium would be good, but they wouldn't put it there.
You do get to go to D.C., I guess. That's not the worst.
I've been to D.C. enough to know I want to go to Hawaii.
Oh, yeah.
And with hey, DC, I'll take a DC trip, you know, Smithsonian, White House, all that kind of fun stuff.
Justin, let's bring this to the board in a minute. I think that'd be a fun one. So, and if you want to come discuss it with us on the board, head to InsideTexas.com. You can sign up today. We're going to have a ton of recruiting stuff all over the course of the next few weeks. And of course, if you're here, make sure you like this video, and subscribe to the channel. We're going to have it not just today with the deep dive, but even further with recruiting scoop tomorrow inside the program and even more throughout the rest of the week. So, Justin, thank you so much. Ian, thank you so much. Thank you for watching. We'll see you next time on Inside Texas Live, presented by Academy Sports and Outdoors.
You missed that.